May I speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. In the church's calendar today, it's the sixth Sunday in ordinary time, the third Sunday after Pentecost. In the secular calendar, it's Father's Day. And in our local calendar, the Sunday of the Providence Pride weekend, and on Monday is the national commemoration of Juneteenth. Over the decades, Pride Month, with its customary Pride marches, has morphed with changes in cultural attitudes towards homosexuality. I refer you to this past week's e-news, if you haven't read it already, in which I offer a more detailed overview of the derivation and contested meanings of the term homosexual, along with an overview of the constituent communities that nestle under the umbrella of the LGBTQ+ Rainbow Alliance. For me, the significance of the acronym LGBTQ+ lies in its modelling not of a single community, but of an alliance of different communities coexisting under a collective umbrella. The Rainbow Alliance is an alliance of difference in celebration of diversity. Given the increasing forces polarizing our society, the toleration of contested difference within an alliance of diversity is an important model for a possible way forward for the rest of our society. The adoption of the colors of the rainbow as the emblem of the Rainbow Alliance reminds us that the Bible In the Bible, the rainbow is the divine recommitment to a regeneration of creation after the flood. The rainbow is the sign of God's new covenant with humanity and with all of creation, a reminder of the divine faithfulness and mercy, a symbol of hope, beauty, and the divine presence guiding us into a new future. Someone recently sent me a cartoon. The cartoon had the words God, the original they, them. Pride Festival has, over the years, become a wider cultural celebration, no longer just an LGBTQ+ event, but a true community-wide carnival. Providence Pride comes at the end of the week in which the Southern Baptist Convention reaffirmed its prohibition on women exercising authority in the church, unless that authority is vicariously derived from the overall authority of a male leader. To emphasize their point, they expelled from the convention all churches with a woman in overall pastoral leadership. Religious organizations are prone to delusion. The Southern Baptists' thinking is that this will stem the hemorrhage of members leaving. Currently around 13 million members, it's estimated that the convention has lost 1.1 million members just in the past 3 years, and in the last year, 500,000. From the outside looking in, it's been a bad week for the Southern Baptist Convention. Clearly, their loss must surely become the American Baptist's gain. Listen, you can hear the clapping in Providence's First Baptist Church in America from here. Conservative Christian traditions, evangelical, Catholic, and Orthodox, are at odds with the social and cultural evolution that has redefined the relations between the genders. They cling onto a first century social structuring of gender relations rooted in a rather dubious theological notion of the Bible-based fatherhood of God. Something immutable to change. God is male and sits at the apex of the authority pyramid. Therefore, men are the human beings most like God. And according to Genesis, it was Adam whom the divine community created first from the dust of the earth. As the male God reigns from heaven, so men exercise the male God's vicarious authority as heads of family units within which women and children nestle in protective custody. This argument is on shaky ground, however. We remember that in Genesis, God may have made Adam first, but he gave all authority over creation not to Adam, but to Adam and Eve as a couple. But hey, who cares? It's only a small discrepancy. Because the argument goes that Jesus only called men as disciples, and Paul said that women must not be allowed to speak in church. End of argument. And abstracting sideways from the family, we arrive at the church, which for the Southern Baptist Convention at least seems nothing more than a collection of male-headed families grouped under a male religious leadership. Like their family constituents, these churches are characterized by the same pyramid structure of authority and culture of protective custody for women and children. And like all forms of custody, protective or otherwise, attempts to challenge it or to step outside its control are met with punishment, the usual one being cast out of the family or the church, social death, and still in some places physical death is the ultimate punishment for challenging the hierarchy of male authority. Now, we should not miss here two essential points. Firstly, gender rooted in authority, resting on the privileges of maleness, is the root of all cycles of abuse in church life, regardless of denomination. Where men are the sole authority, all kinds of abuse flourish. And the second point is that gender-rooted male privilege is conceived of by these men as something of a zero-sum game. Like all authoritarian regimes, no challenge and no change is possible for fear that any change, no matter how inconsequential, will result in the whole edifice being swept away. Last week, the Southern Baptist leadership signaled that they understood the core of this issue only too well. For if the wall of strict male-dominated gender-based authority is breached, where will things end? Well, we all know the answer to that question. It means that any change in the status quo will result in so much more than allowing women a voice, Once change opens the door to questions, those questions will go to the very heart of the construction of gender identity itself. Women in religious authority today, what's to stop trans women exercising religious authority tomorrow? And the actions of the Southern Baptist Convention this past week allow me to segue rather nicely into the celebration of Father's Day. The notion of fatherhood, along with just about every other traditional institution in our society, is now a hotly contested one. All roads lead to Rome, as the saying goes. So if human fatherhood is in contention, then the fatherhood of God, as identified with the exclusively male gender, also comes into contention. And underpinning shifting understandings around how gender identity is constructed lie a number of deep complexity. There's nature versus nurture. There's biology versus social conditioning. There's somatic bodies versus psychological minds. And all I've got space to say here is that for many, motherhood and fatherhood can no longer be perfectly aligned with traditional notions of gender-based identity roles. Because ultimately, motherhood and fatherhood are essential qualities of the divine and are thus reflected in our human nature without discrimination, taking us on a journey beyond all human gendered distinctions. Now, over the last 250 years, we can trace several great cultural emancipation movements. The first emancipation movement took place in the 19th century and riled the 19th century all the way through, leading to the abolition of commercial slavery. In the 20th century, the emancipation of women followed close on the heels of slavery's abolition. And in the middle of that century, within our own living memory, the civil rights movement inspired a movement in many different groups, particularly in the lesbian and gay community, as the shackles of legal criminalization and persecution fell away, paving the way towards a growing acceptance of lesbian and gay sexual identities. And we're in the midst of another great cultural upheaval. The questioning of pre-modern constructions of gender identity. And each shift in culture has been accompanied by an interrogation of the biblical voice, freeing it to speak its truth into new contexts. Episcopalians, together with mainline Protestants, including American Baptists, have been in the vanguard of that evolution. An evolution fiercely resisted by evangelicals and the official voice of the Catholic Church. Resisted at every step of the way. And so the struggle continues. The confluence of pride and Father's Day this year focuses attention on the questioning of traditional constructions of gender. Questioning leads to reaction, and the tactics of traditional gender conformity reaction are taking an increasingly fascist turn. No longer content to arrange matters within their own institutions and communities, white Christian nationalist traditions such as the Southern Baptist Convention see no downside to supping with the devil in pursuit of political power. Such is their fear of any change leading to a loss of historic privilege. Through the courting of power, they seek to enforce their religious worldview on the rest of society through a very unconservative legislative intrusion into the arenas of freedom of religious conscience and individual choice. When the historic champions of freedom of religion, freedom of choice, freedom of speech, and little or no government regulation become the party of infringement of women's rights, don't say gay, public library book bans, and an Orwellian intrusion into the arena of parental choice, we need to wake to the fact that we have entered a world that is no longer for the faint-hearted. Amen.